excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
You can't put it in the win column.
Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby!
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, happy Wednesday as we get another hour of Flames Talk going on this Wednesday, February 26th. February's almost done with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg, and welcome to this hour of Flames Talk, which is the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. Hello, Vix.
Hello, Patrick. How are we?
Good. We are very good on this Wednesday. We're here in our Groundworks downtown studio. We're available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Of course, live right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Our text line's at 960-960, and it is always open for you if you're listening live here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Well, that was a pretty big win for Dan Vladar on Tuesday night in Washington, I must say. We knew why the Flames were going down this road. And I think it was kind of twofold. Like, on the one hand, I think the biggest reason was they need both guys fresh, both guys being Dan Vladar and Dustin Wolf. They need both goaltenders fresh. They need both guys to be ready and able to play quality games down the stretch. And if Vladar doesn't start on Tuesday night, because obviously you were going with your number one, and nothing has changed here. Wolf remains the top of the depth chart guy. So, of course, you're going with Wolf out of the break. But if Vladar doesn't go 2 days later and you hold him out until the second half of the back-to-back, we're talking about February 2nd to March 2nd between starts, and that's a long time between starts. So that was one of the motivations. The other motivation was, I also think if you can, not running Wolf into the ground with nonstop starts is an important thing too. And part of not doing that depends on Vladar giving you quality minutes and quality starts. And he did that on Tuesday in Washington, made 26 on 27. Washington at all strengths generated 14 slot or high danger opportunities and put a good chunk of those on net. There was the blocker stop. There were a couple of tight end stops. There were a couple of post-to-post stops that Vladar made. I thought he played a really solid game, and I thought he didn't have to be spectacular because the Flames blocked a ton of shots in front of him, but he was very, very good, and I think that you can come away from that game feeling really positive about Vladar. So I just... That, to me, was a really important start for him and a really important start for the Flames to continue having confidence to keep going back to him when they feel like they need to.
It was a very interesting spot to put him in, to be perfectly honest, when you're looking at the opposition having scored 15 goals in two games coming out of the Four Nations break. Vladar, as you mentioned, hadn't started in 23 days, pardon me. The opponent record for Vladar against Washington, not spectacular, 4-2-3 goals against and an 850 going in. But he didn't look all that rusty to me, to be perfectly honest. And like you said, I don't think he necessarily stole that game, but he didn't gift it away to the opposition either. Like, he was full mark. The only time that it looked like there might have been some rust was on the one that beat him with the best goal scorer in the game. Looked like Vladar was kind of cheating to the middle a little bit when you had the puck on Ovechkin's stick from the flank. But Vladar did absolutely everything you would have asked him to do if you're a member of the Calgary Flames, whether that's the coaching staff, whether that's the goalie staff, whether that's teammates. For a guy that hadn't started since February 2nd to go in against a team, for all those things that I'd mentioned, then you just want to layer in an 8-game point streak overall and a 16-game point streak at home. Vladar, full marks for him. And to be perfectly honest, and if you listen to Flames Talk on Tuesday, I wasn't a fan of the idea of giving Vladar the start. But what do I know? Goalies are voodoo. This proves it even further. Don't listen to me when it comes to goaltending.
Or any of us. Do we really know what
Kevin Woodley. Listen to Kevin Woodley.
Yeah, listen to Sigalette. Listen to Woodley. Listen to LaBarbara. They know about that. Listen to Mackenzie Skapski. These are people who understand the position. I'm like, oh, he... the goal went in or the goal didn't go in. That's kind of the extent of my goaltending knowledge. This was Dan Vladar on Tuesday night following the win and, you know, going a long stretch between games and picking up the victory nonetheless.
I'm just doing my job here, you know, trying to, if I play, I do my best. If I don't play, I do my best supporting goalie. So nothing's changing for me. And, you know, it just can't be too high or can't be too low. We just got to stay steady for the whole season because, you know, it's the NHL best league in best league in the world, so we can come back to you real quickly.
So that was Dan Vladar post game. This was head coach Ryan Huska post game in DC.
I thought he was excellent, but you know, most of his starts over the last little while have been like that. Even you look at the game in Seattle, the last one that he was in Seattle he was really good for us again. So he's a very good goaltender, and you know, he'd probably like to have a few more starts at this point of the season. And to be quite honest with you, there's been some nights where he's deserved to go back in again. He's just done a really good job, and he's been a really supportive teammate.
So much needed outing. His last two starts have both been wins, and he posted a 9.35 in the win over Seattle was strong, a 9.63 in the win over Washington and was strong. And it's a really important potential development for the Flames. I say potential because a lot of it still rests on what we see from Vladar. But this is kind of where I'm at. Vladar winning his last two starts and looking strong in those two starts. If that's a trend that we can see more often than not going forward in the final 25 games, it does put the Flames in a situation where maybe they don't have to force feed Dustin Wolf all the starts. And it doesn't feel like it's always on Wolf's shoulders, and it's always a situation where even if he's tired, he's got to go in there and post a game-stealing performance. I'm not suggesting that Dustin Wolf shouldn't start more, because he should. I still firmly believe, Dan, that Dustin Wolf is the top of the depth chart guy. I still firmly believe that of the final 25 games, Wolf should start more than Vladar. But if you can trust Vladar down the stretch, that's the ideal situation, friends. It really is. If there's 25 games to go and you don't feel like you've got to play Wolf in 21 of them, and maybe you only need to play him in 17 of them, like, that's a good situation to be in, because it means that you're getting the quality starts from Vladar and he's giving you opportunities to win. And it means that you're not driving Wolf into the ground, which gives you a better opportunity into the final few weeks of the season when you probably are going to Wolf and Wolf only, and you're probably needing points even more desperately to clinch a playoff spot or to gain ground on Vancouver or to give yourself a bigger cushion or whatever in your desperate chase to make the playoffs. Like, in the final couple weeks of the season, you're probably going Wolf as much as humanly possible. And then if you make the playoffs, obviously you're going Wolf. So don't you want as well-rested a Dustin Wolf as you can have if you have that luxury? And that's the big thing, Vic. Like, it's an if. And Vladar needs to keep on giving them quality starts. But if you can get those types of starts from him, and the byproduct is you're not potentially fatiguing Wolf as much as you could, I think Ryan Huska was legit. If they don't trust Vladar, I think they would give Wolf 15 in a row. But if you don't feel like you have to, I continue to suggest that's the ideal situation.
Well, the fact of the matter is you want to keep Wolf as close to 100% on the battery meter as you can without sacrificing or gifting away points, because the situation that the Flames are in the wild card chase, you can't be giving away points at the expense of trying to make sure that your number one goalie is as close to a full tank as possible. And recently, Vladar has given the Flames opportunities to win. He's been at 920 or better in three of his past four starts. He's been 935 or better in three of his past six. But at the same time, he's been 850 or lower in four of the past nine as well. So it's a matter of making sure that when Vladar gets in, he's able to consistently put your team in a position to win games like we saw against the Capitals. Because, yeah, full marks for a guy that hasn't played in 23 days to only surrender one to a team that had scored 15 in their previous two outings. You need to get that consistently, because if this team has designs on being a playoff team and they get there, it's Dustin Wolf's team. There's no doubt about it in my mind. Doesn't matter to me who's playing better, to be perfectly honest, because that's a prime learning experience for Dustin Wolf to get play NHL playoff, Stanley Cup playoff experience. But if he's going into that at 60%, 75%, that's not a great environment as a whole for the individual and the team to be competitive in those playoffs. So if you can use Vladar to spell off Wolf and still give your team an opportunity to win in those games, like, again, like we saw on Tuesday night, that is the ideal scenario because, one, your backup goalie gets starts. Two, your starter gets rest. Three, you're still netting 2 points at the end of 60 minutes.
And we'll see. Like, it's on Vladar to continue to play well. Behind,
flip side, too. It's on Wolf to continue to play well as well to earn the starts that we're not necessarily gifting them, but we both agree that your number one goalie right now is Dustin Wolf. It's also on Wolf to make sure that maintains that, and we've really seen very few signs that he can't. And sporting a 262 goals against average and a 913 save percentage over 34 games, that's good.
On the text line, 960-960, this reads, was this a possible showcase to trade Vladar? I don't think so. I don't think the Flames are actively trying to move Vladar out. I think if they got a good return for him, and if somebody was offering like a second round pick, they'd be open to doing that. But I don't like that. I don't think they started him. In fact, I know they didn't start him against Washington because they were showcasing him for a trade. I know that to be the case. They put him in there because they felt like this is a good time to get Vladar in and that they need to use both their goaltenders down the stretch for all the things that we just talked about.
I think, again, if to your point, if a team comes to the Flames with an offer you can't refuse, you're willing to part with Dan Vladar. I don't necessarily feel Vladar's trade value as it stands on February 26th, that maybe he gets a bump from that Capitals game. Don't necessarily think that one single performance is going to do that. However, I think his worth to the team is greater than what he would fetch at the trade deadline right now.
What else we got here on the text line at 960-960? Ian says, since Vladar played well in Washington, what do you think the chances are the coaches start him in Tampa so he can redeem himself from the 8-goal game earlier this season? I still think they go Wolf, and I also think Tampa hasn't played Wolf this season. They have played Vladar, and they blew 8 past him. So I think it's pretty good bet that you see Wolf on Thursday.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and go, well, Vladar had a really good start, so you got to go back to him, because from my perspective, Dustin Wolf had a really good start against San Jose and didn't get the consecutive starts coming out of the Four Nations break. I don't think we're necessarily in that rhythm. Had Vladar gotten a shutout against Washington, and I know we're splitting hairs here to a degree because, I mean, one beat him. Only one beat him. But I don't think we're in this win and you're in automatically guarantees you the next start. We saw it that Wolf didn't start against Washington, just like I would lean. And who knows? It's goaltending, so I can be wrong. Been wrong once this week already on it. But I don't think we see Vladar against Tampa.
I don't either. I think there would be a large surprise if we saw Vladar go against Tampa Bay. But
obviously, stranger things have happened.
We shall see. And this says, any chance they trade Vladar at the deadline? Wouldn't mind seeing Cooley get some starts too if he can be the backup next year. I honestly think at this point, and I'm a big Devin Cooley fan, I really am, I think the value of him getting the starts in the American League right now, like, Devin Cooley has already played more this season than he has in any other season.
You can probably add up a couple of those seasons. And, you know, his past 3 seasons, he's probably started more this year. I'm just spitballing off the top of my head, but knowing how infrequently he's gotten starts over the last couple of years at all levels, the workload this year is important for him.
His 33 starts this year are the most that he has had at any time in his pro career. He had 26 when he was still with Nashville in 22-23 playing for Milwaukee. Last year he got into 20 games. Like, he's at 33 this year, and he probably hits 45 to 50 when it's all said and done, if not more, this year. I think there's such a value of carrying that number one workload for the first time in your career. And that's why I'm really interested in continuing to see him play in the American League. It's not that I don't want to see him at the NHL level. It's just that I think right now him playing at the NHL level doesn't get him as many starts as if he's playing in the American League.
If elite prospects is to be trusted, and I do believe it is, he has never started from the U14 level onward more than that 26 games with Milwaukee in 2022-23. This is a significant workload that he's never seen before.
Yep.
Bottom line. And to be honest, there's value in him leading the charge to a Calder Cup playoffs as well.
Yep. Couple of other things to touch on. I really like Soloviev. I liked him a lot on Tuesday night. I thought that was maybe his best performance yet at the NHL level. Played with Pahal, was slotted properly on the left side of the third pairing. Go back to last year when he was playing. A lot of times he was playing on his offside. He was playing the right side on the third pairing, which is a lot to ask for a guy making his first few NHL starts. Last night, left side, third pair with Pahal, who's been steady all year. I thought Soloviev looked really good. That was a really positive performance from him and from that pairing. I'd think very long and hard about keeping him in again against Tampa Bay. And you know, last hour, Wilsey made a good point about potentially putting Bean back in. You know, he's a really good skater. Tampa's a really good skating team. But I do think you've got some really nice options there.
The underlying metrics for Soloviev against Washington were phenomenal. Scoring chances, 4 versus against, 8-2, high dangers, 2-1. Expected goals was highest among all 6 defensemen for the Flames at 75.29. Highest Corsi among defensemen, 57.89, pardon me. Those are at 5-on-5. Like, I know he played under 10 minutes. It's a limited sample size. But I don't know what he would have done on Tuesday night against Washington to justify him coming out, even if you are trying to match up a little bit against a faster Tampa Bay Lightning team.
Yeah. And every time you think this team is done, and every time you think that this group is ready to roll over and kind of wave the white flag, like it's that Undertaker gift. Like, there they are, back up off the mat. And they've done it again. They came into the post-break schedule 3 points out of a playoff spot with even games played. You blink an eye, they play 2 games in 3 nights, and they're now a point up on Vancouver with even games played. And I continue to give this team all the credit in the world, because every time you're like, you know, this is probably the beginning of the end. This is probably this
gauntlet of a road trip's going to...
This time the backstep is going to be a little more permanent. And every time they say, no, what are you talking about? And I think they've come out of this break with a very similar attitude as they had coming into the start of the season. Okay, yeah, we're 3 points back, and I know that we've given up a huge cushion, but we still think we're better than you think we are. And you know what? They've put together 4 points in 2 games, and there's been some real positives in those 2 games. There's been some areas where they need to improve in those 2 games, and Vancouver has left the door wide open and hasn't done anything to keep the Flames behind them. And so the Flames now sit back in a playoff spot on points.
According to MoneyPuck, 46.9% chance the Flames make the playoffs. Vancouver's down to 38.7 as well. That's back-to-back days with wrestling references from you.
Yeah, it is. It's a good point.
Is that a theme coming out of the Four Nations?
Completely out of, completely like unintentional, but I'll take it all day.
I have nothing to add to that.
I'm really impressed at them being able to continue to shove it down the throats of the haters and all that type of stuff.
Started game one against Vancouver.
Exactly.
Here we are now.
This at 960-960 from Dylan and Revy. Soloviev's been great. Hasn't given this coaching staff a single reason to sit him or management to send him down. I don't mind Bean as much as a lot of fans seem to either. I just like Solo there for now. And I think, and we talked about this on the round table in the first hour, but if you can have some options where you can put different guys in to suit the opposition, that's not a bad thing at all.
No, you need, in whatever form it comes in, whether it's a guy coming from the minors to the pros or whether it's guys on the active roster jostling for slotting or positioning, you need that internal competition to drive your group. And at times this season, I don't necessarily think the Flames D-Core has had that, even though there have been a number of defensemen on the roster. They've been carrying eight for the longest time all season. You need that push.
Yep.
That's what fuels progress, and that's what the Calgary Flames are seeing right now with Soloviev added to the mix.
Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg along with you this hour on Flames Talk. Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
And this Wednesday edition of the program continues on Wednesdays. We like to check in with our buddy Jonathan Davis from NHL Network and VSiN Sports. JD is our Pacific Division insider, and he joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar right now as we take a spin around this Pacific Division. Couple weeks off for the Four Nations face-off, so on and so forth, but back in the saddle with JD. Hello, pal. How are you?
Better than Travis Green, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, not a great start to this Winnipeg Ottawa game. I agree with you.
Not if you're Ottawa, that's for sure.
Right. Couple wagers on this one, so I'm hoping that they end up paying off. Lots to talk about in this Pacific Division, which remains one of the more interesting divisions out there. Let's start in your neck of the woods. Let's start in SoCal as the Kings with an impressive game this week against Vegas as they continue to really impress on home ice.
Yeah, I mean, look, that was a game. It was interesting listening to the both coaches after the game because, you know, I first went to hear what Bruce Cassidy had to say. And, I mean, he started off and he just said, look, third period, we were awful, unacceptable, you know, soft on our sticks. And then I asked Jim Hiller and he's like, yeah, I mean, they could have blown the doors off of us in the second period. And then the third period, we just kind of, you know, woke up. It was a great, you know, for them, for LA, it was a really good finish. I really agreed with Bruce. I thought that, you know, Vegas made it very easy for them, but regardless, I mean, you know, it's funny when Vegas went on, you know, had those great, you know, some great home years, everyone was saying, okay, everyone's out at the casinos, they're all partying. Well, I mean, I know LA's got a really good nightlife, but 19-3-2, the Kings at home, it's been quite a run.
Does LA have that good of a nightlife? I don't know. We could do a whole segment on that another day, yeah. JD.
Yeah, we could. Yes, we could.
Tell us about the line tinkering the Kings did last game.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, They moved Kempe to play with Byfield and Fiala. And I'm trying to remember, it was as a result of some penalty, you know, just some, you know, just the way things had shaped up and there was an opportunity to move Kempe up. But that line looked really good. And you know, outside of Quinton Byfield's two penalties that he took that, you know, Jim Hiller was more than willing to overlook in that game, you know, they were dangerous all night and they ended up finishing with the final two goals in the game. And, you know, Byfield had four assists that night and Kevin Fiala continues, you know, his goal streak. I mean, it's something that's like seven in the last eight games. And, you know, look, the goal on Monday was, I think it was the sixth goal, you know, last goal of the game. So it's not like it was an important goal, but he's getting hot. And this is something that, you know, LA has been waiting for, you know, for anybody outside of Adrian Kempe. So now, you know, on any given night, they have two threats out there. And, you know, I mean, Fiala has definitely found the back net. The other thing, though, I mean, when you look at the numbers, Pat, I mean, I think he's got like 22 goals, but he's got 37 points. Like, this is not a team that, you know, lately they've been finding the back of the net, but you know, you got 22 goals. You would hope that you would have more than 37 points.
Right. And tell us before we wrap up on LA, what's happening with Brant Clark?
You know, he's not playing much. I mean, the Kings have been one of the few teams that constantly play 11-7. They just, you know, ultimately it just comes down to the fact that they don't really love their 12th forward or their 13th forward, and so they keep playing 11-7. And Brant Clark, you know, since Drew Doughty has returned to the lineup, has been the seventh defenseman. And, you know, look, he plays less than 10 minutes a night. He played a little over 8 minutes against Vegas. He played 5 minutes and change against Utah. And so I think, you know, really what LA is doing is that they're allowing, you know, he's learning the NHL game here, albeit he's not getting a lot of time out there. And, you know, I don't know which is the best method. I really thought, to be honest with you, Pat, that for him to go to Ontario and just get some minutes in during the Four Nations, you know, may not have been a bad idea, but it was never on the radar. But that's, you know, and you know, hearing, you know, Elliot talk on the podcast, you know, teams I believe are like calling Rob Blake and just wanting to know, are you willing to move him?
Huh.
And I don't believe you can't, like, they're not willing to move him. I you know, especially considering everybody else that they've lost over the years, you know, Durzi, Walker, and, you know, really the big one, Brock Faber, who was in the Kevin Fiala trade. So, you know, I don't think there's any appetite whatsoever. I will say, you know, we talked about Byfield a few minutes ago. I was very surprised to see Nick Kypreos' story on Sportsnet.ca suggesting that Byfield could be a trade piece for LA. You know, I'm not here to criticize Nick. It just definitely, you know, it definitely opened some eyes here in Southern California.
Interesting. And let's see how that story plays out as well. Let's talk Quinn Hughes in Vancouver, because, hey, there was plenty of controversy around whether Hughes was going to play in the Four Nations faceoff in the final last week, but is back now and ready to return for Vancouver.
Yeah, and it's huge. I mean, look, there's no question that, I mean, he's their MVP. He should be in the MVP race. I mean, the numbers with Hughes on the ice and not on the ice are so, it's incredible. I don't remember I heard Kyle Bukauskas referencing it once in the last couple of weeks, but it's crazy how much better Vancouver is with him on the ice as opposed to not. And, you know, for me, you know, Elias Pettersson's struggles are one thing. I think, you know, those to me are, I would rather have Pettersson struggle than not have Hughes in the lineup, because he is the guy that generates everything from this for this team. So I'm interested to see how things go tonight with him back in the lineup. Sometimes it takes a game or two for a team to get adjusted to their star player coming back, because a lot of times, you know, everyone's just kind of watching and waiting for him to do something. But there's no question for Vancouver and for them to make a playoff run, Quinn Hughes has to be healthy, and they can work around, in my opinion. It's a lot easier for them to work around whatever struggles Pettersson has. And I think put gave to you in the notes. I mean, Rick Tocchet has the lines in a blender. It's interesting to see how it works tonight with Petey and Hoglander and Jake DeBrus.
Yeah. So line juggling in LA, some line juggling in Vancouver. It is our weekly chat with Jonathan Davis, Pacific Division Insider, joining us here on Flames Talk. Let's move to Vegas. And, you know, we just talked about LA, who won that game earlier this week, but Bruce Cassidy behind the bench for the Golden Knights, not impressed with what he saw from his group.
No, I mean, Pat, for two periods, I thought, you know, I thought Vegas was going to win that game on Monday. They to me were the better team, definitely in the second period. They absolutely controlled that game. And then 20 seconds into the third period, Trevor Moore scores a goal, and LA never looked back. And, you know, Mark Stone was asked after the game, you know, is fatigue from the Four Nations setting in? And you know, he kind of pushed it to the side. I wouldn't expect nothing less from Mark Stone. But, you know, look, today's a day off for them. Or, you know, today they, you know, they gave all the Four Nations guys a day off from practice, which I think is, you know, makes a lot of sense. You know, even for Aiden Hill, you know, who didn't play. But it was just to kind of recharge the batteries. And I think Stone is, I'm sure, and Al Pietrangelo was another one that, although didn't play in the Four Nations, we know he's battling some type of injury, and he too was given the day off. I think that I'm interested to see what happens tomorrow against Chicago, because they were a very angry group in that locker room after the game on Monday night. And knowing the types of players on that roster, you know, from Eichel to Stone to Petro, I don't want to be Chicago tomorrow. The Blackhawks have actually had some really good first periods of late. I think they've actually led it in the first period, Pat, in four of their last five games, and then they fall apart. I don't think that's going to be something that we're going to see tomorrow. I expect Vegas to be a very angry team tomorrow and come out strong against the Chicago Blackhawks.
Yeah, and you're right. Hawks have some issues of their own. Seth Jones didn't hold back, did he?
No, he didn't last night. And just talk about him, nothing has changed, you know, since day one. And then did you happen to see what not only were the shots on goal insane, I think if I saw correctly, the shot attempts were 93 to 39 Utah last night. That's crazy. And the game didn't go to overtime.
Yep.
There are big problems there. That's a story for another day, but yeah, I mean, Seth Jones was very, and I don't know about you, Pat, I wouldn't be so excited to trade for Seth Jones.
Not with that contract.
You know what? I don't even know if I wanted to ask the price, to be honest with you. I don't know. Maybe he's your sixth defenseman, but hasn't shown anything over the last couple of years that would give you any indication that I want to, you know, give up any significant assets for that guy.
And
have to pay the price on that.
It's so weird because he decided to sign in Chicago too. He knew where they were going. He saw the roster. I know Chicago traded with Nashville to bring him in, but it's not like Jones entered this team with copious amounts of talent. You had to see the writing on the wall then, didn't you? The whole thing is strange. And now him not being happy about things, didn't you know what you were getting yourself into? I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe
that's it's called. He was colorblind.
Perhaps. Maybe.
Green, very green.
Yeah, there was a good amount of money attached to it. I will agree with you there. Let's move to Anaheim they're going to their next game's against Vancouver, right? They're going to get the Canucks on the second half, the back to back.
Yeah, they get them, and I mean it's becoming, you know, it's a good story right now. I mean, look, they're, you know, losing the last few, or at least losing last night. They just, you know, they ran out of gas last night against Buffalo. It was three games in four nights for them on this road trip, and they just looked tired. And I mean, they had the early 2-0 lead, and then, you know, Buffalo storms back and scores three unanswered. But what we're seeing from Anaheim is that they're trying to put themselves in the position where they're playing relevant games late. Now, the standings say that they're 7 points back, but I always tell people, take a look at that column of regulation wins. If your number is less than the team that you're chasing, then you need more than the points that actually say in the standings. So they're 8 points back as far as I'm concerned, right? Because seven gets them tied and they're going to be trailing, you know, likely trailing in the regulation win column. So, you know, it's a lot, and they've got a couple of teams to climb, but, you know, they've won, what, 7 of 9? I think in 6 of those games, they've given up 2 goals or less. They're playing some really good hockey. Mason McTavish has had a nice run here in the second half of the season. And so, yeah, I think for them, if they can, you know, continue to at least threaten to make a playoff, that's good. Now, The other thing I do want to touch on is the Zegras suspension. Fully warranted, Pat. But I will tell you, my one positive takeaway from it is this would never, he would never have put himself in a position years ago, I don't believe, to do something like he did. His game wasn't like that. I think that we're just seeing more from Zegras as he's trying to become, and I don't mean dirty player, but he's getting more involved in the game than
right.
just being
more engaged,
that
right?
guy. Yeah, more engaged. So, you know, that to me was the one positive thing for me from that is that we are seeing a far more engaged player this year in Trevor Zegras. And I don't know if I said this with you in one of our previous hits, but in talking to people in Anaheim and not management, but just some people around the team, the one thing that they said about moving Zegras is he backs players off, the opposition off, with his skill. We don't really have guys on this team that do that. And so these people are just saying, be careful. You know, if you trade him, especially with the way you're seeing his game progress, we don't have that type of guy on this roster right now. And I think keeping Zegras would be the right move because he is – trying to become the player that they want him to be. They made asks of him, and I think that he has stepped up to the plate. He's 28 now, and he's definitely the elder statesman. But I don't know. I just like what I see from the player.
Mm-hmm. Last thought on Anaheim, and that's the trade they pulled a little earlier this week. Tell us about the decision to bring in Ville Husso.
Well, it's just to give them, I mean, you know, a guy that's got some NHL experience because they just don't have it. I mean, Oscar Dansk, you know, was the goalie that they recalled when John Gibson went down. And, you know, if Dansk played, you know, a handful of games in Vegas, he's not an NHL backup. He's, you know, an AHL goalie. So, and look, Husso for the most part this year has looked more like an AHL goalie than an NHL goalie. Although I think his last start or his last maybe two starts in the NHL, we saw some better, a better performance from Husso. So it's really right now, it's a depth move at the AHL level. And I do believe, look, I'm expecting to be on the NHL roster and Dansk gets sent down. I apologize. I didn't go check into that because as long as Gibson's out, you know, you don't want to overwork Dostal. And so this is just insurance. And if they do trade Gibson, I think they've got someone that they're far more comfortable in playing, you know, on nights where they want to give Dostal the night off.
Yeah. Good stuff, my friend. Appreciate the time. As always, JD, we will do it again next week, see where things sit in this Pacific Division playoff race, where LA sits, if maybe the Oilers could mix in a win here and there, and how this Flames-Canucks battle.
Pat, are you allowed to say that on the air?
Well, no, it's more just a shot that the Oilers haven't been able to mix in wins since the break. I think what has happened is Connor McDavid won the Four Nations faceoff, and now he's just done. He's like, you know what? I did my job. I'm done for the season. I think that's what actually is happening.
Did you get any sleep after that game? You must have been pretty pumped after last night.
After the Washington win?
Yeah.
I mean, it was an early game here, so I got to bed. I got to bed pretty early. Was able to still have a decent night afterwards. So, yeah.
Oh, yes. Oh, so you probably got home at about like 2 a.m.
Actually, I think I was home at about 10:30 after the show. Like that to me is
a.m.
10:30 p.m.
Oh, p.m. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Take that. We'll talk to you next week,
JD. Nice win.
It was All right, nice man. Win. Yeah, it was great. Okay. Good stuff as always. Thank you, pal.
Take care.
Jonathan Davis, NHL Network, and VSiN Sports joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, serving the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs for over half a century. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery as we start to wrap things up this hour on Flames Talk. Aaron Vickers is on Twitter at AA Vickers, and our outstanding producers, Shan Vergie, Cam Hughes this hour. Thank you, boys. That'll do it for the Sports Drive. Brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockandSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.